My name is Tricia Barbas, and I teach sixth grade communications and social studies at Pittsburgh Science and Technology Academy.
My name is Teresa O'Neill, and I am the literacy coach at Propel McKeesport Charter School.
My name is Marcy Crow. I teach fifth grade at Mossside Middle School, which is a part of the Gateway School District.
My name is Andrea Croft, and I'm a kindergarten teacher at Edgeworth Elementary, a part of the Quaker Valley School District.
As we record this discussion, these teachers are preparing to finish up the school year with their students. What are your hopes, your concerns, even your words of wisdom for your students so that they are prepared as much as possible when they return to their classrooms in August or September? Let's start with Tricia.
I hope that they get some rest and refocus because that's what I'll be doing. So the main thing that I know I'm planning this year is to definitely send the students home with some opportunities and options for what they can work on over the summer. It's kind of a gray area where you don't want to say, here's your summer required assignment because you don't know what kind of resources or access the students might have over the summer. But there are students that they might be bored, so they might want some opportunities for stories to read or lists of, if you like this book we read this year, then you'll like this. It's actually kind of interesting because I will teach the same students again in the fall. We loop with our students at the school in the middle school for 3 years, so I kind of have a good place where I know I want them to start with the school year.
Andrea?
For primary students, a big emphasis that we have is the continuation of students' literacy skills. So all throughout the school year, we do encourage the students to go to the Swickley Public Library, which is a fabulous resource right in our community, but we encourage this even more for the summer months. They have amazing free programs for all students. Preschool babies, actually, babies up through the high school that just promote reading and literacy skills for children. This is just a great continual practice. The library and I actually work very closely in the early childhood world to meet with early childhood teachers and talk with them about skills for babies that they're looking for, and she integrates those into her programs. And then she and I talk a lot about different skills for kindergarten. So she has created wonderful, wonderful programs for early and emergent readers. And I would definitely suggest to all parents, if you have a reluctant reader, to go to that public library and talk to your child's teacher about books that they like in the classroom or books that are popular in the library. And finding books that your children like to read can definitely build their confidence throughout the summer and keep up those skills. And I know nonfiction books for young children are incredibly popular, kind of helps to satisfy some of that natural curiosity that they have. And I know my students really like those. I also tell parents that your student doesn't have to be reading the book to reap the benefits of a book. They can listening to the book and seeing adults using good book handling skills, engaging your child by asking them questions as you read is also really important and a great way to keep up their success.
And I'm sure we're going to get varied opinions here or varied insights. Teresa, how far up do you go?
Our school is actually K through 8. So we actually have middle school children that will be transitioning into high school as well. So reading for middle school children sometimes over the summer is very difficult. They are sometimes very reluctant to want to read outside of school. And one of the programs we have set up, kind of like Andrea was saying, with a partnership, we do have a partnership with Barnes & Noble in the waterfront. And Nancy Heron there is the community relations manager. And the students will receive a summer reading journal. And if they are able to read 8 books over the summer, they track them in their summer reading journal, and then they're able to return this completed journal to Barnes & Noble in the waterfront, and they will receive a free book. So it's just a little bit of added motivation. So it's a wonderful partnership, and they also provide resources for parents as well. There are some worksheets available that aren't really worksheets. They're more as a parental guide. It gives the parents some suggestions of just simple activities they can do with children, such as a radio show based off of a book they read. So it's kind of a nice added piece that sometimes parents can't think of activities to do with the children at home based off of books that they are reading.
Now, Marcy, fifth graders, what are your words of wisdom? What's your encouragement that you give them as they're wrapping up their school year so that they are prepared, ready to go come day one as they enter sixth grade?
You know, one thing I talk about in fifth grade and just had this discussion today is that learning doesn't stop when you exit the building of a school, and we were talking about how the lifelong process of learning is what they make it. So I'm primarily a language arts teacher, so many of the ideas that I've heard so far with Teresa and Andrea, I've done in years past. You know, I love to hand out the book list, and I love to maybe give a gift book. And this year, I had to take a hard look at whether or not what I was doing is effective. And I had to determine it wasn't as effective that I hoped, because what my students were coming to me needing were experiences, not just book reading over the summer. And by fifth grade, that happens. So I developed a new program this year, which I call Leap Into Learning. And it plays off of the idea of a leap list, which people are talking about. You know, there's the bucket list and now there's the leap list. So I've developed a program encouraging them, and I've given them a menu of choices to create a leap list and to really give themselves experiences this summer so that next year when I am teaching reading, they have some of that prior knowledge they can make connections with, because we know when information makes sense and has meaning, they're going to retain it. And that was a key that was missing with my students. So through this new program I've developed, it really helps them create experiences for themselves and their parents. So when we come back in the fall, we're going to be able to tie that information into, you know, what we're doing in the future.
All right, we've heard words like leap lists, opportunities, options. Should there be any summer requirements?
I don't think so. I think, you know, we have to acknowledge that as teachers, we have roles to do. And although I communicate with my students through the summer, through technology in this program, they communicate with me on their leap list, and I'll do the same with them. We need to acknowledge that learning does not just happen in school. And when we can start to appreciate the experiences that they have with their parents, with their camp counselors, with their siblings and friends, and value the relationships they're building, the sights that they're seeing, there's a value to that. And that can't necessarily fit into a time slot. And sometimes it's difficult for children to, you know, really pace themselves. And they don't have that support at home of someone who is able to do it because of the demands of a parent's work or their home situation. So sometimes we're creating more of a hardship on a family by saying this is required. And, you know, additional hardships for some kids can really turn them off to education. And I think Tricia said in the beginning that they need to rest. And there's a reason why there's a hiatus for school. And we need to really appreciate what that brings to not just the students, but the teachers as well.
Andrea?
I really like what Marcy was saying about having the children create their own leap list. I know just as adults, we find things that are more motivating to us, the things that we're more interested in. So by students self-selecting the things that they're interested in or the experiences that they're interested in, they're more likely then to be more engaged in their reading. I think that's powerful.
Tricia?
You don't always know everything that's going on in the student's life. So when you give them the options, it gives the student the chance to see, well, what I do outside of school, it has value. And, you know, my family situation is this right now, but, oh, look, this option on the leap list matches perfectly with me, or this book on the list matches perfectly with what I'm going through and what my family is like. So showing the students that your cultural background and your, you know, what you're doing outside of school, you need that. You need to bring that inside of school. You can't just ignore that. So I definitely, you know, would agree with the idea about having those options there. But I would also agree with Marcy about saying, you know, the required aspect of, you know, is that, should it be required? And I kind of go back and forth with that. And I feel if a school, you know, as a system wants to require something, that they would have to put all the supports into place. And for me personally right now, I said I don't have something required because I haven't built up a system, you know, to say, okay, you're at home, this is what you'll do if this happens. And for students to be successful, you have to have the scaffolds in there for them. So you could require it if all the back work was there and everything is available for the students. But without that, I would feel hesitant.
Marcy?
We use the word requirement, but as any teacher knows, there's a way of requiring it without saying requiring it, and that's really motivating. So if you can create a project which excites students, and, you know, I'm fortunate enough with this new program, I said, well, how could I describe it to someone else who doesn't know it? And they said, just tell them it's awesome. So, you know, I think if there's something awesome, you don't need to require it, because there's that intrinsic desire to want to do it for themselves. But then when you put a component in, like I like to do, where they correspond with me via our the Gateway Moodle system, you know, use that technology, there's an accountability factor, because fifth grade, they still want that pat on the back for a job well done, or the acknowledgement that they are going the extra mile on their summer break. Then I think that no requirement necessary, they do it for the love of learning, which is ultimately what we want to instill in them.
I often tell parents that finding fun and creative ways to work with your child is key, especially in the summer when it's nice outside and they'd really be rather running around. But we know the importance of practicing and sharpening those skills. But finding different games, finding different ways to motivate, it's not just always a flashcard or a, you know, something, a drill and kill kind of activity, but you know, motivating your child through fun, getting up, learning, dancing. I know whenever we read stories in the classroom, you know, we'll read a story and then we'll retell it by acting it out or using puppets or making masks and scenery. Those are all ways to practice comprehension and retelling and summarizing skills, but the students don't even really know that they're doing it.
All right, Tracy, do you need requirements or do you just need motivation?
I think it depends. Honestly, I think it has to do a lot with the population in which you're dealing with. A lot of times when we first started, we did have a requirement for summer work packets, being that sometimes there was not somebody at home able to assist a child with summer work, or was not available to take them to the library, was not available to even be at home and work with the child. So when the children left us at the end of the year, we had multiple children asking us, what am I going to do over the summer? A lot of times in schools, summer break comes and children are excited and they can't wait. We kind of sometimes have the opposite at our school, and summer break comes and we have children breaking down and crying because they don't have a structured environment to be at for 6 to 8 weeks during the summer, and they want to stay in school. So if we can give them some options of some things to do over summer break, and some of them want us to hold them accountable. They say to us, I want you to tell me I need to turn this in August, because then I'm going to do it because I know that it shows that you care about me. So we've gone back and forth between having things that are required, things that are options, but I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer to the question. I just think that it's our responsibility to make sure we're giving children options and choices of things to have available and have access to over the summer is the most important aspect.
And like Teresa says, I think that sometimes what people miss is that, you know, we develop relationships with our students. And for many times, we are the person with these children more waking hours than their own parents. I think that what goes along with that is to, on the last day of school, to say goodbye. Nice year, goodbye. I mean, that's harsh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't, in any adult relationship, we don't do that. We don't cut it off. And, you know, communication is a key. And in communicating, there's learning that can go on in the summer and help them transition, and also can help them develop some, you know, interpersonal skills that they need as well in life.
Andrea?
I think the most important thing is we've kind of all been saying, but making the connection between learning and your real life and how you can use it is really important. And I think about just different ways that make sense for children, young children, old, young, that make sense, including some of the writing, like integrating your writing over your summer months. So writing a letter from a destination, maybe you went to on a vacation, you know, writing a letter back to a friend, or just simply writing a letter, writing an email to a grandparent. Any of those things can be, or writing mini book reviews for your, you know, for your friend to read, or keeping a summer journal. That just doesn't have to be all writing. It could be sketching and recording some things. I think those are just easy ways that students can continue to practice and sharpen some skills, but they're fun and they're exciting for the students because it's not necessarily a requirement, or it's not necessarily something someone's making you do. It's for the enjoyment of learning.
Earlier this week in our kickoff series on this learning initiative, we heard about how the summer break became standardized in the late 1800s and early 1900s. So is there summer break vacation needed for students? And if so, what's the optimal length? What do you think, Teresa?
Well, being that I am working at a charter school, our students are going an extended school year currently. Our students go 190 days, and our teachers actually work 220 days. So our students will be in school until June 14th, and our teachers will be working until June 20th. And then our teachers will be starting back beginning of August, August 8th, and the students will be starting back 2 weeks prior to Labor Day. If you ask the majority of our children, they will tell you initially, oh, the break's too short, but every August they are basically banging their doors down wanting to come back into the school. So I think, again, it varies, it depends. I think that a break is nice, especially for the staff. It gives everyone a little bit of time to refresh, refocus, regather their thoughts. But I also can see year-round schooling being beneficial for the children, just to give them stability and someone there to count on every day, knowing that when they walk into the building, they're going to see a familiar face, they're going to see someone who cares about them and respects them and is there to support them. So I can see it both ways. I would go, I don't know. Year-round schooling, I don't think would be a bad idea, and having like a week off, you know, or 2 week breaks in between each like trimester or quarter, I think could be very beneficial for some of our youth.
Now, Tricia's shaking her head or nodding. So year-round school or shorter vacation or recharging, both for students and teachers?
When Teresa said, you know, the teachers need to reflect, I mean, that's totally where I am right now. And it's just like you go through the year and you realize, like you said, Marcy, this didn't work, I needed to improve this. And if the teachers didn't have that time, you would never get better at your job, and you get better every single year. And you really need that time to be able to do that, because during the day and during the year, you can't stop and reflect. You know, again, as Teresa said, with the extended time, I think it's the village that needs to step in with that too, to give that time to the teachers and, you know, and the students to have a little bit of a different experience. Extending the time, I feel, is something that it should not solely lie on the school district or the teachers, but the community, you know, really banding together.
Marcy, do you need it? Do the kids need it?
Well, there's a big difference between the two. I mean, first of all, the logistics you said of how it started off in the 1800s and harvesting and so forth. And there's logistics now. A lot of schools won't go to that model because of the air conditioning costs it would take. And, you know, there's costs, just the logistics. Aside from that, I think there's a value to kids just being kids too. I mean, they have their whole lives to work a year long and to be that. And there's something very precious about allowing children to be children. And I think in society, with all the media and technology, children don't have that opportunity for play. Now, as far as teachers, on the other hand, I think people would be shocked to know just how much teachers work during the summer. And it may not be inside of the building working, but you know, I have a tote that I keep in my basement that every visit to Target or a book fair that I'm at, this tote just piles up. So we're always thinking and always planning. You need a little bit of time to recharge. So you're your best for all of those kids. They deserve your best, and you need that time. But I think there's a fallacy to teachers having summers off, which all of us have heard. The summer off fallacy, I don't know. Yeah, technically we're away from the school, but I don't know of a teacher who sits poolside and drinks lemonade all summer. You know, I more or less see us in Target and in Joann Fabrics and coming up with poster boards and felt boards and everything else that goes along with it.
Andrea, I want to ask you, as a kindergarten teacher, do you think the answer about a length of summer break varies with the age of the child, or does it matter at all?
Well, I was going to say that first of all, I agree with the panel in that an incredible amount of reflection and professional development happens over the summer for teachers. I know all teachers have professional goals, and you know, you work with your professional goal throughout the duration of the school year, but it's really during the summer when you can kind of piece together and take a good hard look at your instruction, what you did, why you did it, how it was done, and what you can do to be more efficient, maximize your time in the classroom. I mean, a lot of growth and reflection happens over the summer. So as for students, it's interesting. Being a kindergarten teacher, I'm always getting a new group of students. I'm always getting the the youngest learners in our district. We have a lot of conversations, and we work with our parents frequently about how to best prepare their child for the first day of school. So the first day of kindergarten can be met with a lot of mixed emotions for both parents and teachers, or parents and students. And because of this, we want the first day of school for all children to be the best that it can be. And we offer, and a lot of school districts offer, transition activities throughout the summer for students that are incoming to the district.
In a previous report this week, we heard about research from RAND. On average, students who come back in the fall, on average, are 1 month behind where they were in the spring. Now, that means some are on schedule, others are farther behind. Do you experience this with your students, this summer setback, this summer slide? And if so, how does it manifest itself? Tricia.
The beginning of the year is you spend so much time on going over routines with your students that it's almost like I would probably press that they're even a little bit further behind than, you know, what the study's saying, because you get them and you want to have them to know how to, you know, how to participate in your class and how to do all the routines. That the beginning of the year is so much about setting behavioral expectations that by the time you get into the meat of it, they probably have lost, you know, not lost, but, you know, would it definitely need a little more, then you have to hit it a little harder. It's really, that's what's interesting about this year for me. This is the first year that I'll be looping with my students. And my colleagues that have been doing it for a while say that looping with their students is the best thing that they've ever experienced in their life, because, you know, what they do at the end of the school year and what we're doing now is we're gathering some endpoint data to start at this point. You know, this week we're actually doing end of year assessments to know, well, we're going to have the same students, so next year we're going to start them exactly at this point where they left off.
Agreeing what Tricia says, this is Marcy talking again, but in agreeing with what Tricia says, I think every single year my students tell me they've never learned nouns, and we've taught nouns since first grade. I mean, you know nouns, but yes, I think looping would be great. I'd love to try that some year, but if we want to talk about how can we not get that gap that, you know, that they lose a little bit worth of learning, and that's just stimulate them over the summer. And, you know, I think there's one thing we haven't talked about so much is the huge role that parents play in this. And that doesn't mean that parents have to spend all their vacation time in the summer with their child. You save all their sick days. It just means you do the best you can for your child. You use the resources that are out there. And, you know, one thing in developing this new project, and I did it with our technology teacher, Jean Ann Madden, one thing we learned is that for every activity we thought of, there is a website out there that can help. So if I put just one idea is, if you've never caught a firefly, like catch a firefly and release it, there's a website about how to do that. Dig for fossils in your own backyard. There are websites about that that you can look to. The best thing the parents can do is just reinforce the idea that learning is precious, and you can read a billboard and that counts for reading, and you could make taking a walk into a math problem, and let's just keep stimulating them and you know, get these parents involved a lot more so we're sharing the role as educator in their life.
And I know at one way that we've done that in kindergarten, we recognize the parents have amazing ideas and they do wonderful, amazing things with their children. And so as a way to share those ideas, we have the parents send in different activities that they do. So we'll give them a theme: science, ecology, arts and crafts, movement, dance, whatever. And they write down one outdoor activity and one indoor activity that they do with their child. We type them up and then we put them into a book and send them home with the students. And it's not anything that has to cost a lot of money, but when you were talking about nature walks, I mean, amazing ideas that the parents have. Just, you know, here are some different parks we've gone to. Here you can take a digital camera and snap a photo and then go home and make a field guide book with it. You know, just great ideas that they have, and we want to capitalize on that and share those with parents. And also, I know in the Swickley area, a group of stakeholders got together, different community groups, and the district made an outstanding document, an outstanding booklet for the community to use. And it has literally everything from pre-K to high school, all of the summer offerings that the different organizational groups offer. It has the Quaker Valley School District, Swickley Academy, the Lachlan Center, the YMCA, Sweetwater for the Arts, Fern Hollow Nature Center. I mean, you name it, and it's in there. And, you know, as a way to prevent some of that backslide over the summer, as a way to keep students involved and busy, and as a way for parents to kind of plan out their summer in enough advance notice, this resource has been fabulous.
Teresa, you have the same students, you loop with students, correct?
Well, I actually am the literacy coach, so I am in charge of the reading program. Yes, throughout the years.
Do you experience a summer slide or setback or whatever come August?
Yes, we definitely have a summer setback, a summer slide with our children. Going back to what Tricia was saying, we do a lot of assessments at the end of the year, including like the MAP, which is a nationally normed test, different assessments to gauge where the students are currently on their instructional levels. And we give those exact same assessments in, when they return in August. And we are able to compare data to see, is there a slide in their learning? Is there not a slide in their learning? Why or why not? But I agree with what the panel was talking about, you know, parental involvement, and it's really important to get parents involved. But it's also important to remember that not all children have even one parent at home with them during the summer. We kind of look at it as we love parental involvement. We encourage parental involvement. We want to give our parents lots of options of things to do over the summer, and it's really important to give them resources. However, we can't also count on that happening. We need to also just acknowledge the fact that that's not how every family is set up nowadays. There are a lot of grandparents raising children. There's a lot of single parents raising children, and they work in the summer, and or they work at nights and they work these different hours. So going back to, yes, there's definitely a slide, and then just what options can we give not only the parents to do at home, but also the children, so that the children can take responsibility for their education and they know that here's a list of things that I can do at home, even by myself, if mom's not here, dad's not here, or grandma's not at home, here's a list of things that I can do by myself and take responsibility for my education and still be successful.
We've heard a lot of comments about parental involvement, cooperation different of schools and organizations that Andrea mentioned and others have mentioned. So if summer learning projects, initiatives help, and whether they're formally structured or whether it's guidebooks for parents to work with their children or something as simple as a nature walk, what makes a good summer learning activity, whether it's, you know, formally structured and hosted, conducted by an organization, or whether it's parental or whether, as I said, more informal? Marcy.
Well, so what we know is that children learn best when something makes sense and has meaning to them. So whatever it is you're doing, you gear it to your child. You gear it to where they are. You gear it to their interest. So you take what you know about your own child, which is just what every teacher does. We teach them based on what we know. And you think, how is this meaningful to my child? And you try to connect it to real world experiences. And you try to connect it to how this will you know, how this fits into their little world. I guess because I've done it so long, it seems simple to me, but my husband, who is not a teacher, has learned in with our 7-year-old son that anything can become a lesson that you do, from being at a restaurant and adding menu prices together and figuring out how much money to take from that, to being at a pirate game and trying to teach how to keep score, which still blows my mind. You know, how can this be more meaningful and not just do it as an experience? Kennywood, which it's a fun place. Kennywood can be a learning experience. You could talk about physics and you can talk about ecology and you can talk about math and reading. I mean, anything can be a learning experience. What makes it learning or not is, do you have that desire to make it into a learning experience? Because sometimes it's easier just to not do that and just have fun and not think and not concentrate. So sometimes it's just going the extra mile. And, you know, parents are experts with their own child. You know, teachers can be experts in education, but I always tell the parents I work with, you're your child's expert. So you know them best, you know what makes them tick. And in doing so, they know how they learn too. And we're just here to help. I would say just ask your child's teacher if you don't know where to get started. There's no shame in that. Ask them, where can I go to? How can I start? And I don't know one teacher who would turn down the opportunity to work with that parent to make experiences better.
Tricia, what's a good summer learning experience, or what makes for a good summer learning experience?
I liked what Marcy was saying, because she was talking about that, and I was like kind of ticking off in my head mentally, like, okay, that's free, that doesn't cost anything. And I'm saying, no, great learning is free, but it really emphasizes how it doesn't have to be a formal program, and how that engagement is the way that the kids will also learn the social skills that they need to, which is... So to academically learn, you have to be kind of in a I don't want to say safe, but in a socially secure place to learn. And, you know, if that comes over the summer, getting yourself just ready to do that and realizing that I'm learning and it's fun. So I would, while it's, like I said before, you know, the formal programs are amazing, and that's great if, you know, parents will enroll their children in it. But like I said, it was just really interesting when Marcy was talking. I just realized, like, all of the stuff she's saying is free.
I would say the best learning, summer learning opportunity is anything that's motivating and exciting and of interest to your child. And as Tricia and Marcy were saying, I think finding the best learning opportunity really is what is of interest to your child, and making it age appropriate and fitting it into their schema, fitting it into their little world, and making connections between real life, the everyday world, and what they're learning. I just think making connections between what they're learning and the real world and being as motivating and as engaging as possible. That's, like you said, Marcy, the parents are the experts. They know their children very well. So finding things and connecting them with friends, I think if that's possible, is important. You know, children are social beings, and we should give them opportunities to play with their friends.
Teresa?
I agree with what the panel stated. I think that as long as the activity is something that the child is interested in doing, and the child wants to do that, and they have ownership for the activity, then it can be a learning experience. It's really, you know, difficult. A lot of times parents think of, oh, summer learning means worksheets, or summer learning means, you know, working out of a book. And I don't have those resources at home. So I think it's just really important as educators to reiterate to parents, like Marcy was saying, that there are tons of things that you can do on a daily basis, just from reading a drive-thru menu, to going to a park, to going grocery shopping, and just maybe helping educate our parents and grandparents on these different activities would be very helpful as well.
Being in the Pittsburgh area is phenomenal. And, you know, Gateway is close to a very unique area in Wilmerding and Turtle Creek and Wall, and the role that they played in the Industrial Revolution in Westinghouse. Truthfully, taking them for a ride to look at where an old steel mill might have been, or the start of Westinghouse, and talking a little bit about Andrew Carnegie and the difference he made here. It doesn't take paying to go inside of Heinz History Center to go around and explain to them, this is the Strip District. This is why it's called the Strip District, which I just learned a couple years ago. And those things are called inclines, even if you don't go on them, and explain what an incline means. Taking a drive, I think we get away from Sunday drives, but Sunday drives can be really cool opportunities. And when they're in the car, turn the DVD player off in the back and put the Kindles down and look at what's happening outside. And look, there's a farm. And that's a cow, because you might not normally see that. And those are some sheep. And talk about those things so that when they go to read in the fall, they have all those connections, and we're pulling up that prior knowledge that was put in place over the summer.
Okay. My final question, all these examples you've been talking about, is it obvious when your students come back for the start of a new school year who's been engaged, who's been motivated during the summer? Do you sort of see that they're ready to take the next step?
I see it beyond a doubt. I absolutely see it in my student, and that's not to be judgmental on any one parenting style or what happens in the summer, because let's face it, life has its challenges. But the simple truth is, yes, there is a difference when children are stimulated academically, emotionally, socially, and when they are not. And to me, that's just the bottom line truth. So let's do what it takes to stimulate them and get them ready.
Anybody else?
I think we can look at our students and see that they've been stimulated maybe in a variety of ways. So some students, maybe their parent worked with them a lot in academics, so they've sharpened all these academic skills. Or maybe some parents, they went on wonderful vacations and they come back with many cultural skills, or, you know, they have a wide variety of experiences in other cultures, and that's a different type of stimulation. And I would charge a lot of parents to talk to their child's teacher, as Tricia and Teresa said, and Teresa and Marcy said, about asking your child's teacher about what you can do, or asking a librarian. There are a lot of programs out there. I know Quaker Valley offers programs for parents specifically about what they can do to engage their children, but ask a librarian. I mean, that's what they're there for. I know that many teachers and librarians want to help. They just need to know who to help. So I would definitely encourage parents to ask for those resources so that they can be sure that they are doing what it takes to keep their child stimulated in a positive way over the summer.
Well, thanks to our panel for discussing, as a school year comes to an end, and the summer learning opportunities that are available so that the kids are ready for the start of a new school year in the fall. Thank you so very much for participating.
Thank you.
Tricia Barbas is a sixth grade teacher at the Pittsburgh Science and Technology Academy. Andrea Croft is a kindergarten teacher and kindergarten coordinator at the Quaker Valley School District. Marcy Crow, fifth grade teacher in the Gateway School District. And Teresa O'Neill is literacy coach at Propel McKeesport Charter School. I'm Kevin Gavin, 90.5 WESA News.